Before we move on, ESPN in partnership with Peyton Manning's Omaha Productions presents Against All Odds with Cousin Sal. Jimmy Kimmel Live personality Cousin Sal and his three childhood friends, lovingly known as the Degenerate Trifecta, break down the biggest gambling events of the week in their top picks for games. That's Against All Odds with Cousin Sal. Listen wherever you get your podcasts. What's up, guys? Welcome to a brand new episode of DC and RC and RC. Hey, I mean, look, you don't want to look at me. You don't want to look at me because you know what it is. This is the face, guys, of another championship coming to the American Kickboxing Academy in San Jose, California. Guys, coming up on the show.
Do you mean the American Wrestling Academy? Don't nobody there kickbox. There's not one champion that's kickboxed. Tell me one.
Ryan.
Just give me one.
Ryan, wait. I will. Luke Rockhold. Luke Rockhold is a kickboxer. Even though he did take Chris Weidman down to win the championship, he is known as a kickboxer. But when you look at, you remember, Dr. Evil? You remember Dr. Evil? Javier Mendez is coming up on the show. We revisit UFC 280, and we tap in and tap out, as we always do. But RC, look at your boy. I mean, I got my Chapatula shirt on. You know, I'm out here just repping Louisiana, Dagestan, San Jose. I'm out here repping because it was a good weekend from the desert. I can't believe it. I went over there, and I didn't know what was going to happen. And I respect Charles Oliveira. But Islam Makhachev not only wins, he submits the greatest submission artist in UFC history, Ryan Clark. When you watch that, how excited. Because, I mean, listen, I'll say for you, you're a hater. So I will say your first reaction was, it was so dominant, I really didn't enjoy it. But I will ask you now, thinking back, give me some time for your mind to process this. When your mind to process this, I'm asking you, how exciting was it to see that type of performance?
First of all, you're a terrible friend. And here's why you're a terrible friend. We were on the phone yesterday talking about something totally different. And then you ask me about the fight, and that's what I said. And so then you come on the show and use it against me. Like, that's like taking, that's like a personal message, and then you use it against me? Like, what type of friend does that?
This is why I call... This is why I call you all the time, because I hope that you say something I can use against you on the show. I constantly call to try to see what I can use against you, because you have somehow managed to turn everybody against me. I don't know how you've done that. It's like the most, you're so gifted.
DC, here, first of all, it doesn't take a gift to turn people against you because you're so obvious. So that's the first thing. What wasn't obvious to me was how dominant Islam could be. And when you look at this fight, and when I watched it back, Charles wasn't better in any area. And I think a little bit, Charles seemed to almost underestimate what Islam could do on his feet. When you look at some of the sloppy strikes, some of the defense that wasn't the Charles Oliveira defense we had seen, I think that became an issue when you go for the flying knee, you get caught with the right hook. And we all knew that Islam Makhachev wouldn't be scared to go to the mat with Charles Oliveira. He felt that he was stronger. He felt that he could keep top control. And eventually, he submitted the greatest submission artist in the history of the UFC. And so when I look at the people that Charles Oliveira has beaten, because when I look at Justin Gaethje and Dustin Poirier, I feel like Charles Oliveira defeated them in a more dominant fashion than Khabib Nurmagomedov did. And you think about the way Islam absolutely picked him apart, both on his feet and on the ground, I think it's one of the most dominant championship performances by in this case, to me, what would be the challenger that we've ever seen. And I think now the 2-1 odds that this fight opened at makes sense. But DC, even with you understanding the fight game the way you do, knowing Islam Makhachev the way you do, did you expect him or expect that he could be so dominant over Charles Oliveira?
You know what, RC? I remember Islam, and I'll say this without a shadow of a doubt, for the longest time, he's always been like the best guy in the room. And it was always thought that when he could make the same type of skill and show the way that he shows in the practice room in the octagon, he would be the best in the world. Now, I'm not saying he's better than Khabib. I'm not saying all this. I'm just saying that he was always, I mean, he was just always so good. But he was never able to just take it and do it in the octagon as well as he did it inside of the gym. The one thing that was surprising to me was that when I talk to these guys, and I'm talking Ryan Charles, Islam, Aljo, TJ Dillashaw, which we'll talk about a little bit later, Sean O'Malley and Piotr Jan, I had never seen six guys that were so sure that they were going to win. Charles Oliveira thought he was going to knock that guy out in the first round. Islam Makhachev right away said, I'm going to submit Charles Oliveira. And even I, when talking to him, was like, Islam, you cannot believe you're going to just walk through this dude. Because Khabib said a couple weeks ago, Islam will walk through him. And all of us, our ears perked up. We were all going, this guy's out of his mind. There's no way he believes that he's going to do this to DuBronx. And he absolutely did, bro. He did it to a Charles DuBronx Oliveira who was in shape, who was prepared, but he knew exactly what he needed to do. And I thought that was shown very early in the fight. Ryan, if you remember, at the end of the first round, or in the first round, Charles Oliveira, when Islam came into contact with him, pulled guard because he figured yes. he might be able to submit him. But then by the end mm-hmm. of the round, Islam had to take him down again. And in the second round, he defended yes. because he felt the top pressure. And he was like, I'm not going to be able to maneuver my way away from this guy. He's too strong of a grappler. And then in the second round, when he dropped him with that left hand right hook, that was nasty. And then he gets the arm triangle, Ryan. And I've been in this kid's arm triangle. It's so tight. It's so tight. The moment he was able to clear guard, Charles Oliveira tapped. And I'm telling you, bro, it was one of the most dominant performances that we've ever seen from a challenger. You were exactly right.
No, yeah, I absolutely agree with that. I think it was one of those moments. And, you know, you continue to tell me how great Islam is and was. And I had just never seen it or never saw it against an opponent like Charles Oliveira, or against some of the opponents we've seen Charles Oliveira not only face but defeat in a really devastating and dominant fashion. And so to watch him be so confident in everything that he possessed going into the fight and also be able to execute that to the point of submitting Charles Oliveira, I thought it was just such an impressive performance. And the first thing it made me think was, well, who beats this guy? Right? Like who's next? When you beat Charles Oliveira in this fashion, after Charles Oliveira is riding the win streak that he was riding, after he's beaten the people that he has, it's okay, who faces Islam Makhachev in the next fight? And I think that's going to be the decision that the UFC is facing now. And how do we build excitement for that fight? So, DC, with you looking at the entire lightweight division, who gets the next shot at Islam?
You know what's crazy is that, Ryan, we speak to the dominance. He just won the belt. And now we're already saying, what's next? You know, one of the biggest knocks on Islam going into the fight was he's never fought anyone in the top five. He's never done this. He's never done this. But all we had seen him do is dominate. And he dominated the greatest submission artist in the UFC's history. But not only that, he dominated a guy that has really run roughshod over the division. He has finished all these guys, Michael Chandler, mm-hmm. all the biggest names we know at lightweight.
Yes.
Charles Oliveira finished him. When I left the octagon after interviewing these guys, my first question that went in my mind was, what does DuBronx have to do to close the gap on this guy? And there was no clear answer. I was still thinking, but it's going to be very difficult. But if he can't close the gap and he struggles so mightily against those other guys who possess very similar skill sets, who does Islam fight? Like, who at lightweight does he fight, or how long does this guy reign atop this division? The next fighter that's going to get an opportunity to try and solve the puzzle is the great Alexander Volkanovski. You and I both know, pound for pound, number one guy in the world, and rightfully so, after what he did to Max Holloway last time. But when you look at this fight, RC, what do you see as his path to victory against a guy that is so dominant like Makhachev? What can he do to change the way the fights are going to play out?
Hey, DC, it's so funny, man. One of my closest friends, one of my best friends, my brother, he's the defensive back coach for the Dallas Cowboys. And he's always talking about, like, these players getting upset with him. And he says the first thing he always thinks about is, where's my win? Right, so like, let's say it's a big safety, right? He's like, okay, I might have to stick and move, get him and get out quick. Or if it's a smaller corner, he's like, okay, I got to grab him and hold on to him until they break us up. That's how Alexander Volkanovski is going to have to approach his fight camp, because Islam Makhachev is that hard of a puzzle to solve. I think coming into this fight, when you heard DuBronc say, I'm going to walk him down, I'm going to finish this guy in the first round, I believe he believed that. And I think it's one of those things that everybody has a plan until they're hit. Well, with Islam Makhachev, everybody has a plan until he's in top position. And I think once that happens, all those plans go out the door. And when you think about some of the fights that Alexander Volkanovski has had, a lot of those fights have remained on his feet. And when he has had to go to the mat, it was in the second fight against Max Holloway, where he understood the takedowns could be his avenue to a win. Brian Ortega had him in the mounted guillotine and had an opportunity to finish him, but he was able to escape. And so Alexander Volkanovski has dominated at 145 in a way that says he should be pound for pound number one, but he's never dominated any fighter as accomplished as Charles DuBronc the way that Islam Makhachev did. And so to me, I actually don't know Alexander Volkanovski's way to a win. I think for him, he has to do his best to keep this fight on his feet. He has to stick and move. And this almost becomes a Floyd Mayweather type win to me, where you overwhelm Islam Makhachev with movement and volume. Because if you let this fight get dirty, if you let this fight get close, I don't think there is a way for Alexander Volkanovski to take the championship from the new man at lightweight.
You know, it's going to be a very difficult fight for the champ, you know, and I'm talking Volkanovski, because Makhachev is bigger. Dude, this kid, like, we are one punch, Ryan, one knockout from having another Khabib, undefeated guy in his UFC career, or in his entire career. He had one hiccup in Houston way back at UFC 182 when he fought on the same night that I did. But every other instance in which he's been in the octagon, Islam Makhachev has been dominant. His striking is as good as his wrestling. His grappling is second to none. So it's a very difficult puzzle. It's a very tough hill to climb. And his confidence is, I believe, what makes him so good. I was talking to him the other day, and I asked him about Brazilian jiu-jitsu and black belts and all these other things. And he goes, some of these guys shouldn't have black belts. They should start taking black belts away because these guys embarrass jiu-jitsu. This is crazy. He's talking about some of the best fighters in his weight class. You and I have sat here talking to him on this show, laughing in astonishment at the way that he almost disrespects the opponents, but he's not disrespecting them. He's literally speaking his truth that he believes with every part of himself. And I believe in that truth, Ryan. I believe that in that self-confidence is why Islam is so dominant inside of the octagon. And I spoke to Bilal Muhammad after the fight, and he said, I've never seen a guy so calm going into a championship fight. But RC, as you know, when you're the best in the world, whether you were guys were winning the Super Bowl or whether you're winning the UFC championship, why would you not be confident in your ability to get the job done? Now, one guy that is always in Islam's corner, he has been there from day one. He has been one of the guiding lights in this journey. From Abdulmanap Nurmagomedov to Khabib, there's always been a Javier Mendez. And now it's time to go one round with my coach and friend, my mentor, Javier Mendez, as he joins us from AKA. Coach, how you doing?
I'm doing good, DC. Thanks for having me on. It's been like only a couple months. You know, that's cool.
Thanks for coming on, Coach. We should have had you on a long time ago. How that is Ryan Clark. Ryan Clark is a Super Bowl champion for the Pittsburgh Steelers and my partner in the show, and we're both honored to have you.
We are
nice,
Coach.
Nice to be on here with you, Ryan. Let's not get in any arguments, yes, though, sir. Okay?
No, I'm only arguing with DC. That's
wow.
it.
Wow. You hear that?
Yeah, I don't argue with you. I just argue with DC. DC's all excited. Oh, we have six champions. Look at what we do. We're so great. American Kickboxing Academy. We win all the time. So I'm going to respect you, coach, because you are the guide and the guiding light over there. But I'm going to have to keep messing with DC so I can keep his head a little smaller than it's already blown up to be.
Unfortunately, so I love DC so much. It's almost nothing you can say that's going to change my opinion of him.
That's my, good, my man. Love you to death, coach. Hey, coach, so let's get to Saturday night in Abu Dhabi. The training camp for Islam was spent over there at the NAS training facility in Dubai. You guys put in a ton of work. You've been there for 2 months. How close to the plan did that fight go? How close to what you guys worked on, which has always been father's plan, Habib's father's plan, did the fight look like inside the octagon Saturday night?
Well, you know, from the very start of this training camp, he had actually a perfect training camp. He had no injuries. Everything was on point. His weight was on point. Everything was on point for this one. So the game plan was perfect that Habib and I executed. And the beauty about Islam is, like, you know, DC, he's so well-rounded that even if we had one game plan, we can change it in an instant because he's so versatile in everything he does that even if we're planning on taking the guy down, we could have just said stand, you know, or we say stay on the outside, like Matador style, you know, or be on the inside brawling. He's so well-rounded and so well-trained that we can do whatever we want with him. And if I'm not mistaken, just from me watching all the fights and being involved with him, I rarely see him ever get hit. So he might be one of those individuals in the lightweight division or any division that rarely gets hit.
Coach, you know, looking at this fight and some of the things that Charles Oliveira had accomplished before this fight with Islam, it almost seemed that he was at a point rising to be one of those guys to be compared to Khabib Nurmagomedov. So how was Islam Makhachev able to dominate him both on the feet and when he was able to take him down to the mat and submit him?
Well, it's very simple. He's just that good. You know, a lot of people, you know, they would say things like, well, hey, he hasn't deserved it. He's only fought one guy, this and that. Now he's getting a title shot, et cetera, et cetera. But the people that know, the people that train with him, they know how good he is. And I've said it, I don't know how many times, that in all the sparrings that I've had here with Habib, that no one's ever beat any rounds from him, you know, except one person. And that's Islam Makhachev. He's the only one that's been able to win rounds against Habib. Nobody in the history of AKA that's within the weight that sparred Habib has ever won a round against him except Islam Makhachev. So that being the reason, that's my crystal ball. It's like right. There's no other secret thing I can say other than I see it with my own eyes.
Right, coach.
How good this guy is.
Yeah.
Javier, you said that Islam is one of those guys that barely gets hit. Ryan Clark, I'll tell you the stat. This was one that we had on the broadcast last weekend, or we were told in the broadcast meetings. Charles Oliveira broke the record for significant strikes landed against Islam Makhachev in his career. And it was 9, Ryan. It was 9 significant strikes that he landed on Saturday. And that's the record.
He's taking everybody to the mat and submitting him and dominating them. Like, how is he going to get hit? And this guy is freaking phenomenal.
Bro, it's crazy. It's absolutely crazy. But, Hav, when you look at this performance and you look at what he was able to do, Charles Oliveira, it leads to the question, what's next? Because we have seen Charles Oliveira dominate this weight class. How long do you forecast Islam Makhachev holding on to this lightweight championship and have you, and I know Islam hasn't yet because he's so grateful to be the champ, have you even started thinking about things that are bigger for Islam? Like maybe he goes up and tries to challenge for another championship to try and really build on the legacy that he's starting to build now?
Well, I can tell you guys this. Watching one of his interviews, he said he's going to defend the title as many times as possible and then go up to the 170-pound division and win it there.
Hey, look.
I 100% look behind you, Usman.
Look at Usman.
Yeah, the next champ right behind me, yes. He has to show everybody. He's let everybody know he's coming.
What's up?
Go ahead, Hav. I'm sorry. Finish
hey,
your
coach.
Answer.
Oh, yeah.
So basically, I forgot the question. Because Newsman's just looking at me, just wanting to my room number again, so he can charge more charges to my room.
I have one question.
Hey, Coach, you know, you talked about Islam having such an opportunity to dominate as being one of the only guys to have taken a round from Khabib Nurmagomedov, who many consider the GOAT of the UFC, of mixed martial arts. But you look at Alexander Volkanovski, who's number one pound for pound in the entire UFC. When you think about a matchup like that, how would you see preparing Islam to face a seasoned and veteran champion like Alexander Volkanovski?
Well, you know, he's pound for pound number one. You have to give him huge respect, huge props. He's going up at another weight division, another huge respect, huge props. When he walked into the cage to do the stare down with Islam, I saw a very fit, very confident, you know, guy that to me looked like he weighed 170, 175. So the weight difference isn't going to be too much. What only thing I saw that favored us was the height. And I believe 100% the grappling and the wrestling. On the stand-up, let's see how good he is. You know, we're going to have to test it. You know, we're going to test him everywhere. But, you know, he's a definite challenge. There's just pound for pound number one for a reason. You know, and if we don't respect and I don't watch the film on him, then I'm going to be in trouble. So I have to watch film on him before I can actually give you a definite answer what we can or can't do. But what I can tell you is Islam can do whatever we need him to do.
Mm-hmm. You know, Hav, being in the octagon with those guys the other day, you could feel the energy that is building between the fight from Makhachev and Volkanovski, especially with Islam willing to go out to Australia and fight him in his hometown trying to defend his championship. But I want to ask you to speak to the closeness of this team within the team, because there's the AKA team, there's the Eagles MMA team, there's Abdulmanap Nurmagomedov's team. Speak to the closeness of Khabib and Islam and Manap and Usman and Umar and Islam Zuba. You know, like so many guys that they kind of converged on San Jose and they really have changed the culture of the American Kickboxing Academy. Speak to the relationship and how much pride these guys take in representing Khabib's father and his great name and all the effort and energy he put into helping to produce these champions.
Well, you know, the thing with these guys is it's not like they just came together just within the last couple of years. They've been with each other since childhood, since they were 10, 5, 10 years old, 12 years old. These guys have had a bond 20-something plus years, and that's a real brotherhood. And they've been here with me. Khabib has been with me since 2012. And same thing here. Khabib bonded really well, especially with you, DC. You and him will probably have the best bond out of all the fighters that I have here. But he bonded with everybody. As you know, his care for Luke Rockhold, when Luke Rockhold left the gym, I'd always keep getting calls from Khabib, coach, please try to get him to come back. He needs to come back here. He needs us. No, coach, no, we're a team. That's the kind of care and heartfelt, you know, leadership skills that Khabib had. And I know you know that, DC, because he probably talked to you on many occasions that we need to stick together, you know. And that's what they do. When you're in the team, you're in the team. Bilal Muhammad was an outsider on when he came in to train with us. And at the very end, what was he? What did he talk about? He talked about the brotherhood, how they all accepted him, how they all helped him. And now he's part of the brotherhood. You know, that's what these guys are all about. Once you're in the brotherhood, that's it. You're not out. You're never out.
Mm-hmm. Javier, Ryan Clark taught me something. It's a little bit of like slang. They say I've seen them on TV, you know. They talk about giving people their roses while they're here, Ryan. You know that thing y'all say all the time, like give them his roses.
Yeah,
right? Yeah. Javier, let me ask you this question. Ryan and Javier, are you ready to take your roses as you are now a guy that has trained 6 UFC champions and have 7 UFC belts? Javier Mendez, are you the greatest coach in MMA history?
Oh, wow.
I'm a good coach. I've been fortunate. I've had a lot of great things. Zinkin Entertainment really helped a lot by bringing Cain Velasquez, DC, one of the greatest of all time. you know, and I've had fortunate, you know, connections with people that I happen to see. King, because of you, DC, Habib came to me indirectly because you brought King Mo to me. King Mo, Muhammad Bilal, he's the one that brought Habib. So I've been fortunate that way, you know. I don't know anything else to say other than I think I've just been very fortunate. And my bond with my Dagestani guys is so strong that there's more champions to come. So I'm not ready for anything other than I'm ready for the next champ. And I believe it's going to be Usman, you know. And then after that, I really believe that Umar, you know, Habib's cousin, he's going to be the next, you know, champion for the bantamweights in the UFC, 100%. I really believe that in my heart. I see the kid. I see how great he is. And I really don't think anybody's going to beat him.
The main event of UFC 280 was absolutely phenomenal in the sense that we got to see Islam Makhachev dominate in the way that he did. So it was great to catch up on that. But that wasn't the only belt up for grabs, DC. Aljamain Sterling defended his belt against TJ Dillashaw in what I could probably say was a disappointing fight. TJ Dillashaw comes into the fight with a pre-existing shoulder injury. The shoulder pops out in the first round against a guy that you know is going to be constant pressure, a guy that's going to be consistently fighting for top position that will try to take your back. And so you know the grappling is going to be heavy. When you look back on how that fight played out, DC, and then eventually the finish that Aljamain Sterling was able to get against TJ Dillashaw, what are your overall feelings on both fighters and the result?
You know, RC, like, as you were saying it, like, I start to grin because I'm thinking to myself, like, have we ever seen a guy more snake-bit than Aljamain Sterling? Like, remember Leon Edwards whenever, right. Like, Leon Edwards is on his way to a championship fight, he poking people in the eye, like, stuff just going wrong for Leon Edwards to not earn a title fight. It's the same thing with Aljo. It's like, this guy can't catch a break, man. He wins the championship on that illegal knee. People act like he did something wrong. He goes out and beats Piotr Jan. Right. People act like he didn't do enough to get the decision. Now he fights TJ Dillashaw, and TJ Dillashaw has a pre-existing shoulder injury. It's like, I've never in my life seen a guy more snake bit that is as successful as Aljamain Sterling. It's like, this dude has more wins in UFC history than anyone but TJ Dillashaw. This guy has now defended the belt twice and joins a very short list of guys that have done that in this division. But it's like people will always look past what Aljo did because there is always some sort of circumstance that makes his victory come into question. And then it needs to be validated again. How would he have looked if TJ Dillashaw was healthy? How would he have looked if,
right.
You know, it's unfair and unfortunate because the reality is he did exactly what I would have done. Ryan, I promise you, 2004 Olympic Games, I was wrestling in the final trials for to make the team. The guy's elbow got trapped underneath. It popped. You know what I did the moment we got back to the ground? I grabbed his arm and put his back elbow on elbow. His back to pin him. That's exactly what you do. So Aljo did exactly what he was supposed to do, and it's like now he but won't get credit for defending
fault,
a
though.
Championship again. It's not.
DC, that's not
but
his
that
fault.
Was my fault.
That's Bro, that's TJ Dillashaw's fault. Right. I get it, man. How hard it is to get to a championship or to get an opportunity to win a championship. And here TJ Dillashaw has an opportunity to win his third. So I understand after coming off of the knee injury and the rehab and everything after fighting Corey Sandhagen, you don't want to miss this opportunity. You don't want to miss this fight. But the thing is this, look at it. Dana White, obviously, and the matchmakers obviously want you here. You're going to get this opportunity, whether Aljamain Sterling is the champion or someone else. So to go into this fight with that sort of injury is brave. But at some point, bravery and courage almost gets to no self-awareness, almost gets to, for lack of a better word, foolishness. And so now you're fighting Aljamain Sterling, who you know is going to try to take you down, who you know is constant top pressure throughout the entire fight, and you think that you could fend him off with half of your upper body? Because without having your shoulder, without being able to defend yourself, without being able to pull guard, keep him close to you, keep him off you, now Aljamain Sterling, who probably is or who has shown to be the better wrestler, the more accomplished wrestler in the UFC, has an advantage on you that he already had coming into the fight. And so for me, for TJ Dillashaw to put himself in this position, to put the UFC in this position, to put the fans in this position, to have to watch that, and now Aljamain Sterling to be questioned once again. No, don't get me wrong, DC. When I play football, like let's say we're playing New England and Tom Brady is hurt, I am not tripping. A win is a win. Right? Like when we beat Matt Castle on the way to the Super Bowl, I wasn't like, man, I wish Tom Brady was out here. Hell no, Tom Brady can stay where the hell he was. But what I'm saying is it's different in this because it's so individual, right? It's all about the pride of winning. And Aljamain Sterling did that. And much like The Rock was trying to do to Achilles when he killed Hector and Troy, that shoulder did the same thing to TJ Dillashaw. Like DC, is there even any... Is there someone who consults with you or who says, you know what, TJ, maybe you shouldn't take this fight right now?
Bro, you know what, RC? Like, in training camp, everybody, and dude, I promise you, it's like, it's so crazy, right, RC? Because we have done this, and now the story is TJ in the shoulder opposed to Aljo in another right. title defense, which sucks, but that's just the way the world works. Now, in camp, your team will generally go, hey, man, I don't know if it's a great idea. I did my fighter meeting with Dillashaw on Thursday. He texted me after and goes, DC, I want to talk to you about something, but we never got together. Bro, it was his shoulder. And he told it to me in the octagon afterwards, like, yes, that's what I wanted to talk to you about. You can't expect to win that fight under those circumstances. Now, hats off to you for going in there and lasting the first round because the shoulder popped out in 30 seconds. So to even get to the end of round one was a credit to who TJ Dillashaw is as a fighter and as a warrior. But it's unfair to the division because there are a lot of guys that would have said, I'll do it. Marlon Chito Vera would have fought Aljamain Sterling last weekend for the championship because we couldn't have just gone back to Piotr Jan if he knew TJ Dillashaw was injured. And then TJ Dillashaw would have walked back into a title fight. I get it. I don't understand if it was a financial reason why he did it. I don't understand if he thought he won't get better. I don't know what made TJ go into that fight. But that leads me to this question, RC. A couple of weeks ago in Bellator, Aaron Pico is a training partner of TJ Dillashaw. Same shoulder injury, but his coaches could not get the shoulder back in, bro. They were yanking on the arm trying to get his shoulder to pop back in place. So it leads to this, like, are these guys overtraining to where they're having the same types of injuries, or is there something more to it?
Bro, I was going to ask you the same question, DC. More guys in the UFC or in MMA miss fights due to training injuries than football players who get hurt in training camp. That has been one of the like phenomenons to me I've been trying to understand about your sport, DC. Practicing football, though it is physical, though it is rough, is not as physical as the game because you're able to dial it back. You're able to be in this controlled environment. Is that different when it comes to MMA and when it comes to these fighters? Are you guys training at a higher clip than the actual fights take place?
You know what the crazy thing is? Like, in order to fight, to prepare for a fight, you gotta fight. Oh my God, Ryan, there's an earthquake. There's an actual earthquake going on right now, bro. Like, my whole office
Shut the
is
hell
shaking.
Up.
It's, I oh swear to God, like, the whole earthquake, my whole office is shaking right
Are
now.
You good,
an earthquake
man?
Is happening. Yeah, I'm good. I'm good. It's not a big one. It's just like a little one. But every now and again, you kind of get the Rockies. You get the Rockies. I'm serious.
I don't like
that. Was my
I
office
do not
was
like
shaking
that, bro.
Just now. An earthquake. It's so weird for someone from Louisiana where the earth never shakes. But as I was saying, like you to train for a fight, you have to fight. But Ryan, we always said at AKA, we may hurt ourselves getting ready to fight you, but boy, if we make it to that fight, you're gonna have a hell of a time trying to get your hand raised because we knew we were preparing the best, but there is the risk of injury. I believe that the NFL has gotten a lot smarter in terms of the preparation. I watch stuff like Hard Knocks, and I see guys tackling all upper body with shorts on. So being safe is part of the game, and obviously TJ Dillashaw and his team kind of wasn't able to keep him safe as he got ready for the fight. But that wasn't the only bantamweight fight on the card. The Sugar Show. Sean O'Malley made his entrance into the top of the division. He will be the number one ranked bantamweight in the world now going into this fight. That's your guy, right? So I'm on the pivot. But
that's
RC.
My guy. That's my guy.
Sean O'Malley. He won the fight. But did Sean O'Malley win the fight, Ryan Clark?
DC, I'm going to be honest. Here's what I expected. I expected 29-28 Piotr Jan. That made sense to me. And in the end, that's actually not a bad result for Sean O'Malley or the UFC. Let's give Sean O'Malley his flowers, though. Sean O'Malley came to fight. And Sean O'Malley also proved a ton to himself, to the UFC. And I believe Piotr Jan and his people. You remember, DC, we were talking last week, and I think you were talking about Piotr Jan's manager that said, hold on, like, Sean O'Malley can't win, right?
Yes.
And obviously he did. Obviously he did win, but he had to get to a point in that fight where he goes, oh, holy hell, Sean O'Malley can win. Sean O'Malley is that good of a fighter. He is that tough. Listen, we've never seen Sean O'Malley be hit the way he was against Piotr Jan. And these weren't your normal, oh, we're just going to throw the jab out there as a filler. He was hit with hooks. He was dropped. He was wobbled. Mm-hmm. And Sean O'Malley continued to fight. I'd never seen him so gassed before. He was gassed, and he continued to dig as deep as he could into that tank against a championship-level fighter. But in the end, I thought Piotr Jan finding ways to get the takedown. I thought Piotr Jan leveling out the playing field as it came to the strikes and the significant strikes was huge. I will say this, though. The thing that I noticed right off of the bat, and I talked about this last week, DC, because you mentioned Pedro Munhoz. I said, Sean O'Malley cannot start slow and have that filling out process in the first round like he had against Pedro Munhoz, and he did not. There was no fear. He was not scared. The moment was not too big for him. When you think about the fight and what Sean O'Malley earned, do you believe that this is about putting Sean O'Malley in place to fight for the bantamweight title? Or do the judges and what the UFC may want for a fighter not coincide at all?
You know, Ryan, I agree with you. I thought Sean O'Malley fought well. I thought he did a really good job in showing the world and the masses that he does belong. And I said it on the broadcast, like, there are no more questions as to whether or not this kid is all fluff and he's all hype. He's earned a massive amount of respect. But I did believe that Piotr Jan won the fight. I thought Piotr Jan did enough to win the fight. And speaking of Piotr's manager, Ryan, he didn't get to that point. He actually thought they had won the fight comfortably. I watched Khabib's reaction to Piotr Jan losing the fight, and he could not believe that it was even a split decision. So many people, and I've spoken to fighters around the world since the decision, and all of them agree they thought that Piotr Jan won the fight. They think, Ryan, that the judges were judging the fight based on Sean O'Malley's not supposed to be this competitive, so giving him credit for things that he was doing, even though they weren't necessarily up to snuff to what Piotr Jan was doing. I don't know if I agree with that.
He was almost,
because if you flash to a scorecard,
they're thinking he was graded on a curve, DC. Right? You know, you like they're thinking that Sean O'Malley was judged on a curve, as in you're not supposed to be here. You're not supposed to be in this fight that much. So the fact that you're competing at this level is going to give you a leg up or going to give you some kudos. But here are the scorecards right here, DC.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, so I agree with you there. And I don't know if I agree with the fighters. And it's based on this judge's scorecard on the left, Ben Cartlidge. I respect Ben Cartlidge tremendously. I think he is one of the most smart judges in the entire world. I have no problem with David's card. I have no problem with Vito's card. I have no problem with Vito's card. But it's the Cartlidge card that makes me go, maybe we need to watch this again. Because I know how good of a judge this guy is, Ryan Clark. This guy has helped me in terms of understanding judging when he didn't need to, when I didn't have a real vast understanding of the judging. I disagree with him on this one. But because of his card, it makes me go, maybe I'll take another look at it to see if I see it different on the second watch. But ultimately, right. you can take nothing away from either of these guys. You definitely can't take nothing away from Sean O'Malley. And Ryan, a little inside baseball, Piotr Jan is so disappointed in this decision. Piotr Jan is so disappointed in the decision against Aljo that I'm hearing word that this guy may want to look at something different down the line in terms of his career because he just does not feel like maybe the organization doesn't have his back. It's crazy.
Yeah, I will say this. I thought Aljamain Sterling beat him. I thought that Sean O'Malley won the first round. I thought he lost the second round. And I do believe the third round was extremely close. Now, in my untrained eye, I thought Piotr Jan won the fight. But I don't necessarily feel like it was one of those things where everyone could say that people were judging on a curve for Sean O'Malley because he fought that well. But regardless of what we feel, the card said that Sean O'Malley won the fight. And now the new UFC rankings are out. And Sean O'Malley is ranked number one. He's the number one challenger in the bantamweight rankings. Does this mean, DC, that his next fight is Aljamain Sterling? If you thought people were pissed off he got to fight Piotr Jan, wait till you see how mad they are if he gets Aljamain Sterling next. But the other part is this. Right now, Merab is ranked number two, DC, and he says he's never fighting Aljamain Sterling anyway. So maybe this was the move you had to make.
You know what's crazy is that Merab will be... The problem with Merab being number two is Merab can possibly be like a blocker to Aljamain Sterling because he's so good that he's going to beat pretty much anyone else but the guy that he's not willing to face. I love that the division is so deep and so talented. But I don't know if Sean O'Malley gets a title fight off of that decision. But if I'm the UFC, I'm trying to make an O'Malley versus Aljamain Sterling fight because Sean O'Malley is such a star. But if I'm going to do my matchmaking for the sport, Ryan Clark, I got to go in a little bit of a different direction. So when I matchmake for the sport and not for the organization, I go Aljamain Sterling versus Henry Cejudo because Henry Cejudo walked away from the championship as the double champ. If he's coming back, he should walk into a title fight. I'll do O'Malley versus Sanhagen. I would not put O'Malley in there with Merab because I feel like Merab's going to just keep taking him down and you might not get the opportunity to possibly see him fight for a championship. I think him and Sanhagen is a much more favorable, not favorable for Sean, but much more fun fight for the world to watch because these guys are going to go at it. They're both diverse. They're both very exciting fighters. But I'll go Merab Dzhuwalishvili versus Marlon Chito Vera because Chito Vera is big for the weight. He's on a run, and he has shown an ability to fight everyone. And I think it would force Merab into another one of those fun fights like we saw him have with Marlon Moraes, and Marlon Moraes almost had him out of there a couple years ago when they fought. So I'm going Sterling Cejudo for the belt. Guys, give Aljamain one more opportunity to just kill all the questions, Ryan. Like, there will be no more questions if he beats Henry Cejudo after beating Piotr Jan and TJ Dillashaw. Then you go O'Malley, Sanhagen, Dzhuwalishvili versus Vera.
I like that. Listen, I think you go Cejudo, Sterling as well for all the reasons that you said. And one, Henry Cejudo doesn't need to work his way up there because even if he comes back and he fights his first fight and he's not great, then it takes away a little bit of the excitement from the championship fight. Or if he loses, you never get the championship fight. I want to see Sean O'Malley fight Chito Vera again. Remember, Chito Vera was the guy that gave us just leg kick him and you beat him. Remember we got that? And now Chito Vera has gone on a run where he's had these amazing knockouts and he's knocked out, you know, some of the legends of the sport. And I think if he gets an opportunity against Sean O'Malley, who has now risen to number one, I believe that's a fight that everybody tunes into, everybody wants to see, and it truly validates Sean O'Malley being in the spot that he's in. And I'd like to see Merab versus Corey Sanhagen because I believe it gives us the same things that you're expecting. I think you picked Vera from a Vera fight from Merab, but I also think Corey Sanhagen is always double-dutching right on that. I'm elite, I'm not necessarily the champion, but I'm right there anyway. And it really pushes Merab to dig deep and find some of those things that we've gotten to see in some of his exciting fights that we didn't get to necessarily get from him against Jose Aldo in the last.
You know, Ryan, that's a great list. But the beauty in those two lists is that we have six guys that are fighting at that level. And now Sean O'Malley is one of those six. And as a star, as he is now, it really does make the division interesting. But as we move on, you know, there were two other guys that fought last weekend and had real signature wins. Beneil Dariush and Bilal Muhammad. Both of those guys are in divisions where the championships now are tied up. Obviously, Kamaru Usman gets a rematch against Leon Edwards, and Islam Makhachev is going to fight against Alexander Volkanovski. So my question to you, when you look on the outside, knowing that both of these guys fought so beautifully, both of these guys are on massive win streaks, when you look at their paths to victory and paths to championship opportunities, which one do you believe will find themselves in a UFC championship fight first? Beny D, Beneil Dariush, or Bilal Muhammad?
I think Beneil Dariush. Beneil Dariush is one fight away from getting his opportunity to contend for the belt. He mentioned that Charles Oliveira would be the ideal opponent for him. If he gets an opportunity to fight against Charles Oliveira and he's able to win that fight, to me, he gets the winner of Islam Makhachev and Alexander Volkanovski. I think that Bilal is a little further away because you have guys like Khamzat Chimaev, who is rumored to be fighting, or I think is closing in on a fight with Colby Covington. If he wins that fight, no matter if it's Kamaru Usman or Leon Edwards, I believe he's the next person in that spot, which pushes Bilal Muhammad back. And also in an extremely tough weight class at 170, some of the people he would have to fight while waiting are definitely fighters that could beat him, fighters who could be extremely tough. So where I believe he has a longer road to get back and more wins to get an opportunity to get a championship shot, I believe Beneil Dariush is truly one fight away if that's the right fight he's able to take.
For the record, I thought Bilal Muhammad has never looked better. He fought wonderful on Saturday night, knocked the guy out, beat Sean Brady in a way that was exciting. It was fun. A lot of pressure. He did exactly what he needed to do in that spot against a young, undefeated fighter. But with that being said, I have to agree with you. Beneil Dariush would get a title fight if not for this Alexander Volkanovski opportunity right now. So he's right on the verge. And I could see where in a world it happens to Islam Makhachev and he doesn't get to the fight and Volkanovski fights someone else. Beneil Dariush will walk into the next championship opportunity. Or if Volkanovski doesn't make it, I can see Islam fighting Beneil Dariush. And I can even see Beneil Dariush as the replacement guy on the same card in Australia. So I think Beneil's already done enough. And I believe that the toughest matchup for him left outside of the champ was the guy he fought on Saturday. So I believe that he's very close, if not. I mean, earlier in the night, Ryan, before I knew this Volkanovski stuff was happening, I said don't make him fight again. Give him a title fight. The guy has earned it, and he took on a very dangerous fight, won the fight, and he has earned his championship opportunity. But, Ryan, as we do every week, you know what we got to do. It's time to tap in or tap out. Corporate Jake, hit us on that guy, Mike.
All right, guys, Saturday night, a pair of top featherweights face off between Calvin Kattar and Arnold Allen, vying for that next shot at the title. However, the champ at 145 is set to fight for the 155 title next. RC, tap in or tap out, the winner of Kattar versus Allen will fight for an interim title next.
Ooh, that's tough. I think they do. I mean, when you look at Calvin Kattar continuing to have himself in those championship discussions, I believe he has an opportunity, but I tap in on Arnold Allen actually being the guy if he wins. I think what he's like eighth right now, he's a dude that just won 9 fights in a row. I know this, DC, because I tracked this for our show, right? So I believe that Arnold Allen, if he wins the fight, has an opportunity to step in and get an immediate opportunity to be the interim champion at 145.
I tap out. I actually got to disagree, Ryan, because there is no interim title. Like, Alexander Volkanovski just beat Max Holloway in in July. Like, there's no need for an interim championship. You got to think, these guys aren't horribly out of line in terms of time, because unless they take the two, the winner of this fight this weekend, and honestly, it's only going to be Arnold Allen. So I agree on that point, because whoever would fight for an interim championship has to be against Josh Emmett. So unless they're going to put that interim title fight on the undercard of Volkanovski trying to become double champion, there's no need for an interim title fight. So while I tap out on an interim championship, I tap in on if Arnold Allen wins and they fight on the same night as the champion. Maybe it works, I guess. I don't know. Carper Jake, let's go.
Light heavyweight champion Jiří Procházka recently spent 3 days in pure isolation and complete darkness without eating a morsel of food. DC, tap in or tap out, spending 3 days in the dark with no food.
Come on, man. RC, do I have to even tap? I mean, RC, me, 3 days with no food, RC.
I tap out too. What am I going to learn about myself in the dark with no food? Nothing. I'm not going to learn a dang thing, but that I'm hungry as hell. And that seems way too difficult for me to do, DC. I'm not a samurai. I'm not no ninja. I ain't none of those. I'm not Steven Seagal. None of those things. Hell no. I tap all the way out.
Yo, hey, and speaking of Steven Seagal, I saw him Saturday at the fights, and he told me, I told you, DC, if you'd have listened to me in that fight against John Jones, fight would have been over in the first round. He showed me this finger move, and he hit me with it again Saturday, dog. He tried to break my hand. He tried to break my hand Saturday night again, dog. I just saw Steven Seagal out there in Abu Dhabi.
Bro, but Steven Seagal is the greatest upper body fighter in a movie I've ever seen.
Bro,
Steven Seagal doesn't move anything up top. It's just like...
Hey, Ryan, and of all the people my father met before he passed, the one he was most excited about was Steven Seagal, dog. He loved Steven Seagal. But, man, I tap out, man. And Jiří Procházka, I guess, is trying to go to a place that if he can survive that, I guess he could survive anything like he had to against Glover Teixeira last time. So I get why he did it, but I'm tapping out, man. I'm not going 3 days without food. Corporate Jake.
Hi, guys. Last one. Jake Paul versus Anderson Silva takes place this Saturday. And to help promote the fight, both men shared a video yesterday of them, some would say, dancing. RC, tap in or tap out. This is a terrible type of fight promotion.
Actually, I tap out on it. I love seeing Anderson Silva be superhuman. He's like the greatest. He's one of the greatest MMA fighters of all time. He's really getting it. And this just adds to what this fight is to me. Like, this isn't Floyd Mayweather, Manny Pacquiao. Like, if they were dancing, I'd have an issue with it. To me, this seems more fun. This seems more light. Pretty much what this fight is truly to me. So I tap in, man. I tap out that this is bad fight promotion.
Man, let me tell you something, man. This is some old BS. Like, I might have said the actual word when I was watching the video under my breath. RC, I was under my breath going, man, this is some old... I got to be honest. I mean, they dancing. Look at these dudes. Look at these dudes, man. Like, come on, man. Like, Anderson Silva can really dance.
Only thing
too,
is bad is that Jake Paul's dancing is bad. Anderson Silva is killing it,
Jake
bro.
Jake Paul cannot dance.
Yeah.
Jake Paul actually cannot dance, dog. And look at Anderson. Anderson actually looked good dancing. And guess what?
Bro.
If they let... I don't know what's happening Saturday, Ryan, but if they let Anderson just go fight this dude... Anderson gonna beat him too. So he gonna beat him at dancing.
Yes.
And he gonna beat him in a boxing match if they let him just go fight this dude this weekend.
I would hope that Anderson Silva wouldn't take a dive.
No, man, I know. I know. But you know me, man. We're in a world today where I just don't know what to expect. But hey, dog, Abu Dhabi was crazy. I run into my boy Steven Seagal. Yo, I met Steve Harvey, bro. Dude came up to me, started talking
That's
to
dope.
Me. I was like, man, I watch everything. I met Steve Harvey. The boy Hasbullah was out there. Hasbullah had his first fight inside the octagon the other day. He won it on the UFC's 35-pound division.
Okay.
My boy Hasbullah doing his thing. It was a tremendous weekend from Abu Dhabi, RC.
35.
You keep doing your thing, my brother, man. Keep killing it.
And love my
every
dog.
Tuesday, guys, catch me and RC on YouTube, ESPN2, DC and RC, man, every week right in your house, in your
How's
living
the earthquake,
room.
Bro? You good?
5.1, RC. 5.1 earthquake
Crazy.
Just hit Gilroy. Crazy. Until next time, guys. Peace.
2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart?
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes!
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.